The theme for the whole series is Inner Journeys, and the reason I chose that title is that many of you are retired and are in the second half of life and need to focus on the inner life. And I speak about dreams because dreams are the royal road to the unconscious, or as I wrote up here, we are most awake to God when we are asleep to the world. And the book that is at the bookstore, and as Tom always says, this is a plug, it's only $2.95, is Morton Kelsey's Dreams, A Way to Listen to God. And if you will, if you're interested and you want to read it, then at the next session you can bring up questions and I'll try to answer them and we can talk about them. In most sessions I will talk for about half an hour and then we'll have some sharing, but anytime you have any questions, just feel free to interrupt. I have put three names on the board. Everyone is familiar with Freud. Fewer people are familiar with Jung, and maybe some of you have never heard of Adler. All three were pioneers in exploring the unconscious at a time when that was unheard of. I mean, we didn't have a science of psychology, and psychoanalysis was a real breakthrough. What he postulated was that there are drives in the unconscious that determine your behavior, your conscious behavior, which is very, very much smaller than the unconscious. Sort of like, liken it to an iceberg. Your conscious self is like the tip of the iceberg and 4/5 is underneath the water. Similarly, there is more in you that is unconscious than there is conscious. The consciousness is what you deal with in the world, and what you respond to with. Or the unconscious is what is awake while your consciousness is asleep. And dreams touch upon that sphere which is invisible, which we call the spirit, the Holy Spirit, or non-physical reality, that which is beyond time and space, and brings up symbols which Jung called archetypes, that if you listen to your dreams can give you wisdom, warning, and healing. But not every dream is a big dream. Not every dream contains great wisdom. But every dream is necessary, whether you remember it or not, because it keeps you sane. We know that we dream about 5 or 7 times a night, and it is a way that the brain clears itself of all that it has taken in during the day, so that like an adding machine, it gets cleared. Whether or not you remember it, this takes place. The last dream of the night, just before you wake up, is the one you're most likely to remember. And some people dream stories and dramas, others have fragments, others have images. But if you keep your eyes closed for a few minutes as you wake up and want to remember your dream, the images will rise. It's a question of wanting to remember it, because it's there, and not letting the outer world impinge on you right away. If you wake up and say, oh, today's Saturday, I have to go on the type, or I have to go to the office or something, the dream is gone. And the dream then is ephemeral and yet quite substantial, a nice paradox. The dream is filled with images, symbols, and I'll be talking about those later. And the dream is a drama that can be interpreted by you, or if you are going to a therapist or analyst, he can help you interpret dreams if you bring them to him, because it is like an x-ray. When you break a bone, the doctor usually sends you to the radiologist to see what kind of a break it is or whether it is even broken. He can't just by looking at it tell whether you've broken the bone. Similarly, by talking and sharing, you can tell a lot. But if a person brings you a dream, it just is like a mirror to the part, to that part which you cannot see. So it's like an X-ray picture or a mirror. So in therapy, I follow Jung and Freud and Adler, all three place high emphasis on dreams. In fact, Freud pioneered in talking about dreams and setting up or naming the symbols that, as you all know by now, because it's common knowledge, we're all sexual symbols. So what does a tower represent, for example? A tower represents a penis. A cave represents the womb, according to Freud. And all he postulated was the sex drive and the death wish in the unconscious, which to his pupil, Jung, seemed simplistic and failing to take into account the fact that the unconscious also contains creativity and the spiritual and a vast array of other drives besides sex and death, or life and death. So after they worked together for about 4 or 5 years, they could not see eye to eye. Freud had a dream that Jung interpreted, and Freud resisted fiercely, and they broke up over that. Jung published his Psychology of the Unconscious and published altogether 17 volumes. He was about 20, 30 years younger than Freud. And a Swiss psychiatrist, whereas Freud was a Viennese psychoanalyst who lived at the turn of the century and was somewhat rigid in his approach. I mean, I know I'm biased against Freud, but the reason I'm a follower of Jung is that he postulates a spiritual, the need for a spiritual commitment for wholeness, that you cannot become whole unless you have a spiritual commitment. And my first lecture centered around the saying, we have this treasure in earthen vessels. And I'd like you to reflect on that as you go through the days, because as we grow older, the earthen vessel deteriorates, but the treasure can shine more and more brightly. Welcome. A few minutes for a few new people to come in. One of the terms that Jung has coined is individuation. And the journey that we talk about is one of becoming more and more of an individual, integrating more and more aspects of yourself into a whole, and realizing that no matter where you are, there's still more to do, there's still more work, there's still more aspects of yourself to integrate that you never have arrived. And sometimes when we're feeling grand, we think, now this is where I want to stay, and we resist the fact that we have to like go out of Holden and face the world again, or face our dark sides and integrate those. And he also postulates a spiral growth. So that, as you can see, it's kind of a loose spiral, but you go over the same ground over and over again. And hopefully, when you come to your difficult points, you have a little bit increment of experience to help you over those rough spots. So that as you grow and go along your path, you become more and more integrated and whole. But if you find that you haven't resolved a problem back in childhood, adolescence, early youth, it may become a stumbling block. And as we know, when energy is blocked, it will cause you dis-ease, psychological dis-ease, and you may have to have the help of a trained therapist to help you unblock the energy. the reason I went into, became a therapist was to help mostly creative people unblock some of the energy so they could become, have energy available to pursue their career, to have more energy available for what they were trying to do. You've all heard of writer's block, for example, when you sit there and look at the paper and nothing seems to come. Well, that's one example of blocked energy. That doesn't necessarily require a psychoanalyst to unblock it, but sometimes it has deeper roots. So as you go along the path, as I said, you learn that you have some new experience that resembles what you did before, and it helps you overcome the difficulty. Now, in dreams, this path is often seen literally as a path. And if you dream, for example, of sailing over the water, we often, as we say, it's easy, it's an easy sailing over the depths, so that you are able to smoothly go forward. But if you're swimming and almost drowning, you would probably agree with me that this would be a sign of danger, and that maybe you need to look into your life and see why you're struggling so hard. Or if you're swimming against the stream, as I shared with you once before, a key dream in my youth, was swimming against the stream, struggling terribly, and the voice said, why don't you turn around and swim with the stream? And the conflict in my life was between career and marriage. So when I turned around, it was a lot smoother most of the time. any questions so far? Now, I would like to talk a little bit about one of the mechanisms of defense. We're not talking here of warfare, we're talking of how we protect ourselves against some of the uncomfortable things in our lives. And projection is a common mechanism that we use. Projection means that something in the unconscious is projected onto another person, that we don't recognize the fact that we're, what we say about the other person is really what's happening to us. When you listen to gossip, sometimes you can see, you say, oh, she really keeps a dirty house. She doesn't know how to keep house. That may say something about the fact that you yourself are not a very good housekeeper. That's a very mundane example. But what I'd like to talk about is projection. The projection, not of the actor projecting his voice out. Yesterday I was told I have to project my voice up into that corner. But projection of the inner complex onto another person. One of the complexes that he talked about, or one of the archetypes, was the anima and the animus. Anybody here remember what they are? Okay.
The anima is the female component of the male personality.
Right.
And the animus is the male component of the female personality.
Right. Jung postulated that we all carry around in our psyche an image of the opposite sex that is idealized. The woman has an animus image, and the man has an anima image. And this is then projected onto a person, and they're suddenly in love. The person is absolutely wonderful, without fault, just wonderful, and you're walking on air. But suddenly one day, or sooner or later, you notice that he or she has clay feet or some fault that irritates you, or you have an argument and suddenly you see that it isn't this princess or prince on the white horse, but Joe Doe or Jane, an ordinary person with faults, and you have to begin building a relationship. And It is at that point that true love begins, when you love the person as they are and haul back your projections. Similarly, in analysis and in therapy, you project onto the therapist a parental figure and relive some of the conflicts. And part of therapy is hauling back the projection, recognizing it, making it conscious, which can be painful sometimes. Another concept. Oh, any questions before I go on? Another concept, yes?
When you talked about the projection of toward the therapist, you're talking about an idealized parent, even if that ideal parent didn't exist in one's own childhood.
Right. That happens quite often. And often it is the parent with whom you had a conflict. And I think sometimes we talk about the problem of whether a person should go to a man or a woman, and if we have a preliminary interview, we can often see whether he or she would work better with a man or a woman, depending on what the conflict was in their childhood. Though you can work with anybody as long as you have a good rapport. I think Jung would always give people a preliminary interview, and I did this too, to see if there was this kind of rapport. It's a non-rational, non-material thing that happens. And there's only one person in my whole experience that I couldn't work with, and she also felt the same, and then she went to somebody else. So that it's important that something happens, that there is a relationship. Which brings me to another crucial difference between Freud and Jung. In Freudian analysis, you lie on the couch and you go 5 days a week, the analyst sits behind you, there's no eye contact, and hopefully he listens to what you free associate. And you're to free associate and bring up everything that comes to your mind, just everything. And he notes where you hesitate, he notes where you're blocked, and I'm sure you've played a game where somebody tells you a word and you're asked to give your first association, and if you're given certain key words that deal with a complex or with a pain, you find there's a pause, or it takes you longer to find the association word. This free association is a very good technique. I have no criticism of it. My criticism is that the patient client lies on the couch and the analyst sits behind him and there is no relationship between the two. In the therapy or analysis with a Jungian counselor or therapist or analyst, you sit face to face and there is an eye contact and there is a relationship, and as I said earlier, a strong positive projection at first, then a very negative projection, resistance, because when he starts probing, like the dentist, when he finds a cavity, you know, where it hurts, that's when your resistance starts. And sometimes people quit at that point, which is too bad. If you overcome that resistance, then you can begin to work on the transformation of the energy. And it varies. Some people ask me how long it takes. It depends on the severity of the problem. In general, 6 months to a year. And once a week, sometimes twice a week. And during the interim, you're asked to keep a journal and to test out what you have learned in the analytic hour. And usually the initial dream that you bring to the analyst is used in depth, and you're asked to keep a dream journal and to bring in as many dreams as you have during the week. And because the analyst is asking you to bring a dream, because you're also paying money, and because it really is important, you're motivated, it's surprising how you remember every dream every night. And I've kept my own dreams for almost 30 years now. And as you look over a series, you see a red thread running through there are themes. But I was motivated, I had to go through training analysis and early on an analysis of 2 years after my parents died, and I think that was the best investment I ever made, and I would say that you don't have to be in dire straits before you see a counselor or therapist, sometimes we ourselves can't help ourselves grow. And you can speak to that, I'm sure, since my friend here is also a therapist. Any questions at this point? Well, everything must be so clear. All right. Now, another term that he uses is differentiation. And that is, as you get to experience something, you differentiate it and then integrate it into a new whole. And the example I like to give is, before you came to Holden, it was a word. You had some idea of what it was like. After you leave, you will have differentiated the experience of Holden so that you will go back with a whole different concept. And if you come back, there will be two experiences of Holden that you can integrate into a new whole. You understand? And this goes on indefinitely. And that's what's exciting about psychic growth. So individuation and differentiation go together. I talked the other day about psychological types, extroversion and introversion. And if you want to get the details, would you listen to the tape, because I don't like to repeat myself. But extroversion and introversion are terms that Jung coined and that have been rather misused in the common usage, because it doesn't necessarily mean that the extrovert is a happy-go-lucky fellow and that the introvert is somebody who sits in the study with the books. It is essentially how you use the energy, whether you get your energy from outer events and give it back and need very little time or energy inward. The introvert gets his energy from the inner core and deals with the world only to the extent that it has to be dealt with, but needs a lot of time and energy for the processing of the inner events. How many of you keep journals here? Well, that's wonderful. And I would urge people to at least keep track a little bit of what's going on psychically, and certainly if you have a dream, to write it down. And to, while you're here, I'll be glad to talk about it. Otherwise, to let it speak to you and think of it in terms of its theme and ask a question, what is it really trying to tell me? Because very often, if it's a big dream, you will remember it and it'll speak to you loudly and clearly with a message like, slow down, why don't you be yourself, or any number of messages. I haven't got it offhand, but Marvin shared a wonderful dream the other day about the message he got from seeing Christ. And I appreciate that very much. That was the message, essentially, was, why don't you give of yourself? Was that it? Those dreams are truly rare and wonderful, and you probably never will forget them. Most dreams, as I said, are processing. Now, this term archetype is something that Jung coined to describe those images and figures that appear in dreams. I'll write this down. Archetype. It's a universal predisposition that resides in the unconscious that is, again, only known through dreams, but it is also very evident in myths and fairy tales. And parenthetically, if you're young parents, it's very important to raise your children by reading fairy tales, because the fairy tales contain the wisdom in images like the king and the king's daughter and the prince on the white horse, the dwarf, the ogre, the witch, thank you. I don't know what to think of it. And they can come to terms with some of the wisdom of the ages through stories that delight and don't scare them the way, alas, a lot of TV does. But I don't want to get off on that. Archetypes and dreams appear in two guises. There is the wise old woman, and there's the flighty young girl. There's a wise old man, and the, what's the opposite again? The simpleton. There's the hero and the trickster. There's the great mother and the witch, the great father, the ogre, and shadow figures that often appear as dark, sinister people, and for reasons that I cannot explain, but usually of the same sex, so that your shadow figure, if you're a man, would be a dark man, if you're a woman, would be a dark woman. And then active imagination, we can sometimes have an exercise where we will go down to the level of the subconscious and experience the rising, perhaps, of a shadow figure. And maybe we'll do that next week. But at this point, I just want to talk about the archetypes that appear in positive and negative, and they always have both sides. We also have a creative animus and a negative animus. The negative animus is the kind of person who appears dogmatic and argumentative and almost destructive, and often appears in dreams as a person who overwhelms and destroys, tries to overwhelm and destroy the dream ego. Similarly, you have the trickster who will appear to come into your house and want to steal something from you. And whenever you have dreams of losing something or being somebody trying to steal something, it's often an aspect of your shadow that appears in your dreams. When you somebody asked me the other day about, are the dream symbols fixed? How do we know what they mean? They are not fixed at all, but there are general symbols that are almost universal, so that there are a few that I'd like to throw out. Water is often the unconscious. A house is often the psychic, the psyche, and where you are, whether on the ground floor or up above or down below, could be depicted as consciousness, ego, and unconsciousness. How you travel is important. Whether you bicycle or walk by your own efforts, or whether you take a train or a car or an airplane and are transported, that's a passive mode of transportation. What happens when you travel, whether you run into a roadblock or crash, or whether it's a smooth journey, says a lot about how you're going on that path of individuation. Yes?
You're confusing there. What do you mean, walk, ride a bike? I mean, what? That's if, telling someone something about you?
If you're dreaming that you're walking or bicycling, you're doing this by your own efforts. I'm contrasting the mode of transportation. And whether you're actively using your energy or whether you're letting yourself be transported, then sometimes flying is very, very common, and falling, especially falling. I'm sure everybody has had that. Those forms of anxiety dreams are very common. Fires, floods. When you are in a difficult situation, you are likely to have some anxiety dreams. And how they appear and what they say to you can tell you how serious your inner conflict is. Any other question? Any? Oh, I thought you had your hand up. Yeah.
I often have dreams that if I'm in a room and there are lots of people, or I'm going into a big auditorium and going up steps, that I sometimes I just all of a sudden I'm sitting in a chair and I rise above the whole thing and I'm at the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm floating around all over. Or if I don't do that, I'm in a swimming position and I'm a people and so I have no problems. Or if sometimes I'm on top of a building, I suddenly just float off and mm-hmm. and have no problem in landing. And I often wondered what that meant. I like those dreams.
Well, you almost answered it yourself, I think, when you said, I have no problems, you see. And it's a way of rising above a situation, literally, in the dream. And if you find it pleasant, maybe that means that you can rise above your given situation and see a little farther. That's one possibility. The fact that they're pleasant speaks to that. Anybody else?
My friend who couldn't come today, but she told you about her frequent dream nights in a row about houses. She had one nice night she asked me to share with you, and she was in her house, mm-hmm. which didn't look like her house at all, and her brother-in-law, of whom she's very fond, was visiting her, visiting them, and as she went by his door, she saw him and he was taking a cyanide pill. And she said, Joe, don't do that. And he popped them. And she went to the phone to dial 911. She couldn't get the dialing. She said it seemed like it took her 20 minutes to, she never did get 911.
Mm-hmm.
And there, she went back to his room. He was just fine. What happened?
This was a dream.
Uh-huh.
A little complex. I don't know
and,
how to.
And her brother-in-law does not live here, but visits frequently, mm-hmm. and is coming soon with his wife.
Well,
and they're very compatible.
Mm-hmm. They are compatible.
Oh yes, very compatible.
Unconsciously, there might be a wish that is not so compatible.
Well, now there's one thing, and I certainly don't mean to presume to give you an answer. I only know that the only difficulty in this coming visit is that his wife is not well,
mm-hmm.
has been suffering from shingles for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and it's not a good situation. And I just wondered if that might subconsciously be something that's in her
what's
mind,
rather
what
interesting.
She's going to
do yes, I don't know. She is obviously perplexed about something in that relationship,
mm-hmm.
and I can talk to you about it afterwards.
Right,
it seems
good.
A little complex. But sometimes dreams do all kinds of reversals and they're filled with paradox. In fact, Monday I'm going to talk again about paradox. But what she saw, she may either wish that he would die or she's happy that he's not dying, or it could be about the wife.
Mm-hmm.
Very complex,
yeah.
Hard to say. Anyone else? Yes.
I told my dream here several years ago. I dreamt that I was with my mother in a beautiful park. All of a sudden, she went up on a higher elevation. Oh, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 feet up. It was a beautiful area, just beautiful. That's strange. Well, about 2 weeks later, we were in church and in Tacoma, and the pastor's wife called us along and said, Mother's pastor.
Mm-hmm. So she was in a more beautiful place. That happens often. Did you have any inkling that she was ill?
No. She didn't die real suddenly.
I see.
But anyway, I never thought about dream until she passed away. And I thought,
uh-huh.
That's strange. I feel that the Lord is trying to tell me something.
Well, frequently we dream before someone dies, but more often after they've died, that they are in a good place and they come back to comfort us, to speak to us and say, do not grieve so much, I'm okay. But that's a rather beautiful dream you had. If I may talk for a minute about dreams of dying, if you yourself die, No, for me, that part of yourself needs to die so that something new can rise, which is part of our whole faith, that when we die, we will rise. But in dreams, it is really true that if something dies or withers, that something new will emerge, and sometimes it predicts, even before you are aware of it, what the next step will be, because the unconscious is just a little ahead of you, just a little smarter than you are.
Yeah, I've found that really true, that my unconscious will keep me honest in that. In that I will have the exact same dream every single night until I consciously recognize that dream. Like I was in a space where I was just overextending myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept having this dream where I was dressed in my business suit, and I was just sitting there like this, like a, you know, I was ready to collapse, and I was telling somebody how worn out I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that dream every single night until I said to myself, "Self, this means something."
Look at her. She's my best pupil here.
And so I kind of looked over my commitments and decided which ones I could postpone and stuff like that, and then the dream quit.
Well, you've just beautifully exemplified what I was going to say next, namely that repetitive dreams will repeat until you do something about the situation, as you did, if you're listening to your dreams. Any other comments or questions?
What if you in a dream that somebody else dies?
Well, it depends, again, what this person represents to you, in what relationship you are to them, what part of yourself they represent. Often, other people, and the more they are strange and unrelated to you, the more likely they're parts of yourself, paradoxically. It may also be the real person, but usually it is part of yourself, an aspect of yourself. And if you have a specific dream, you could work it through. Some people have a gift of extrasensory perception. They already have this in their conscious life. And then they will dream, perhaps, that somebody died at 3 o'clock, and indeed the next morning they know the person died at 3 o'clock. But that is rare. That is as rare as musical genius. I mean, most of us don't have that gift. So when you dream of somebody dying, it is more likely an aspect of yourself than the real person. That takes away some of the fear of looking into dreams, I think.
I mean, in my case, some would say, well, it's just a coincidence. But to me, it doesn't seem that way.
No. Well, shall I talk about synchronicity? I will in a minute. Yes.
In the case of twins, they seem to have a great knowledge of what the other one's doing, even though they aren't together. Mm-hmm. How do you explain that?
Well, if they're raised together and came, especially the identical twins, they often are very similar, but not necessarily so. I've known a number of identical twins who very consciously tried to be different, but they are more connected simply because they came out of the mother's womb at the same time and really came from the same, very same genetic pool, because most siblings have greater variety.
It's more calm, isn't it, for them to...
Sometimes, not necessarily so. Yeah. Susan, thank you. Yes?
I have my father used to have dreams. He's been gone for many years now. He used to have a series of dreams that we used to laugh about.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to be wondering. Anyway, he would be in a business meeting, or he would be going to a social function. He would be going to a dinner, and all of a sudden in his dream, he would be nude. Bare nude, and we used to just kid him about it, but we never, of course, analyzed what it would cost. But he didn't seem to be too disturbed by it, because it suddenly he had no clothes on.
Was he a very open and honest person?
Yes, he was an outgoing person. Had lots of friends and very well.
All right. Was the dream saying to him that he was open, naked psychically?
I don't know. we didn't
do. That's what I would say, that he was able to be totally himself, even in a group of people. Or, you know, there's
not in the nude, he was a little embarrassed.
Well, not literally. I'm trying to make it symbolically, you see. And while we're talking about symbolism, when you dream of embracing another person, it often means not just sex, but that you want to take into yourself some aspect of that person's personality, that you love this person, have a relationship with them, and that you want to introject, is the technical term, some of their qualities. So not everybody you embrace in your dreams do you want to go to bed with, to be literal. After yesterday, I can say that. Yes, Marvin.
Our pastor mentioned one time how he had, quite often he dreamed of finding himself in a pulpit. With being nude. He's now the doctor, and he explained it that he knew it was because his constant concern or fear of not being properly dressed when he got it before his congregation.
Right.
It showed up in his dreams that way.
What would you say about not being properly dressed, John? Or do I put you on the spot? I've had a lot of dreams.
It may depend on how the person feels about his own body, too.
Yes.
There's a certain kind of self-consciousness there that is always present in how I present myself, project myself, or maybe I'm always consciously trying to cover up something, which our clothing does for us.
Right. The fact that clothing covers us and hides those parts that we don't want people to see. So psychically, we try to put barriers around ourselves and don't let people see everything about ourselves. Part of that is good protection, but when it becomes too rigid and you don't want people to get too close to you, it can become a barrier between people. And again, as you said, he may have been self-conscious about how he dressed. And I'm again thinking of last night when Howard played the priest and he put on a paper napkin as his collar and it kept coming off. And it was so funny. Yes.
I think this is a good example, this dream of being in a particular situation without your clothes is a good example of how a symbol can be just a little bit different depending upon who you are or what's going on in your life at the time. Because like we've talked about how it could be a symbol of being an open person, or how it could be a symbol of being concerned about your attire, or how you feel about your body. And I know I've had this dream. I had this dream a lot when I was in college. And it was, for me, it was a test anxiety dream, because it always happened around a test, and I would be sitting there taking my test, and all of a sudden I would be without my clothes, you know. So it was an anxiety of not being prepared for the test.
Very good. That's
so
true.
I guess we have to look at where we're at and what our circumstances are.
That's right. I would like to say that in any case, if you keep a dream journal, just note down a little bit what's going on, whether you're taking a test or whether you're preparing for a trip, whether you're in or out of a relationship, whatever is happening to you. It doesn't have to be a whole paragraph, just a word or two. Just come from a wonderful birthday party or anniversary party. You might have a different kind of, might mean something very different. So that to know where you're at makes a difference in what the dream means. But the anxiety of taking a test, going on a trip, often shows itself in either losing something, losing your purse or some belonging, or being inadequately dressed. Very universal type dream. Anyone else? Yes.
You wanted me to?
Yeah, well.
I was wondering if we sometimes use dreams to balance out our waking hours. Like say if we're too serious or whatever while awake, our dreams become comic, just to balance out.
I think that's one of Jung's great postulates, actually, that dreams balance your life or are compensatory. And when you are in therapy, you often see how this is true. When you are upset, as I said the other day, it's as though you were walking on a tightrope, sort of like this, and the dream comes, helps to bring you back into balance. And very specifically, some of the paradoxes in dreams do that. And some dreams are very funny, and some dreams are very punny. And a name that I'm still puzzling about is that I was to marry this man called Moschlich. And I didn't know what it meant, and I still don't know what it means. So, but maybe it's some ancient language that I don't understand. But go ahead.
Alice and I are very good friends, and I was telling her about some of my dreams, and she said, "Don't you ever have any happy dreams?" And I couldn't think of any at the time, but the one I just happened to recall is walking right underneath the ceiling. I'm just floating around. I've had that recurring many times.
Mm-hmm.
Not for a long time, but that was fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, like this lady over here, how many, are there other people here who have been floating around in space? All right. Yeah, seems fairly
good. Well, I did one time. I was floating around, and the next day I found out there was an earthquake.
That's a rather serious matter.
Yeah. If you dream of somebody that is already dead, does that have any significance?
Well, I think I mentioned earlier that usually or often there's a need to relate again to the person that you loved or were related to, after, and when they have died, they come back in your dreams to assure you, reassure you that they are in a good place or that you're still loved by them. Some kind of reassurance or affirmation. Usually. I don't know, we could talk about your specific dream if you wanted to later. I'd like to share with you one that is really beautiful about a person who had died, who was a very close friend of ours for some 20 years, who appeared, he came to our house as he did always, looked just the way he always did, and sat down and talked to us, and talked literature to my husband, and listened to me play the piano. And then he looked at his watch and he said, "It's time for me to go." Picked up a paintbrush, all this is a dream, painted a strip in the wall, and walked through it. Yeah, that was
it's
just
very
beautiful.
Clear, huh?
Isn't
How did
it?
You analyze that one?
Well, he was able to walk through walls and whatever. It was beautiful. It was very reassuring. Does anyone else have a dream? We're about 5 more minutes here. Nancy.
I had a dream this morning after the fire alarm.
Oh, yes.
It took me a long time to go back to sleep, and this is just a fragment as far as I know. I was in a huge area of some sort, and looking up, there was this tall series of compartments, things that were sort of stacked on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And looking up here, I could see a girl in the compartment in the lower right-hand corner. And I didn't pay a whole lot of attention, and then I sort of went away, and then I got a little concerned. It was kind of a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
She looked perfectly happy, she looked safe, but then I got a little concerned because it was up high.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back, and she wasn't there.
Hmm. Did you know her?
Not that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm. Just a face, or she was just standing there, or
she was just kind of sitting there, and kind of
mm-hmm.
like she was perfectly content.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe like Brian's magic tricks. It was there, and it wasn't there. I really don't know. It is just a fragment. It would really depend who the girl was and what your relationship to her was, and if you don't know her.
You normally say if you dream of the dead, you hear from the living.
That's a nice saying. I hadn't heard that before. Had anyone else?
I expect a letter the next day.
Mm-hmm. Well, that brings me to one more big term that he coined that we always joke about, but is very serious, and that's synchronicity. It means something happening at the same time. A coincidence, but it's a little more than a coincidence. It is something that has an inner relationship. It can be meeting somebody that you have dreamt about, which will catch you up short, or making a connection with somebody or something that is totally startling, getting a telephone call from somebody you've just been thinking about. John, help me. Innumerable synchronicities. Synchronicity is a coincidence that shows up the inner connection between things. And it usually means pay attention to some aspect of either the dream or the reality and take heart that things are really more connected than you are aware of and that there are more things in this world than are dreamt of. Thank you very much. See you on Monday.